Welcome everyone to episode 208 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I am your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Liam Soher to recap Liverpool's 2-2 draw with Man United.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So Liverpool once again failing to come away with the win at Old Trafford. It was the FA Cup a few weeks ago and now it's the Premier League. They took the lead on this occasion. Luis Diaz midway through the first half. But in the second half, things threatened to fall apart for the Reds. Bruno Fernandes capitalising on an error from Gerald Kwanzaa to score from long range. And then Kobbie Mainoo curling Man United 2-1 ahead. And it wasn't until there were 5 minutes to go that Liverpool won a penalty through substitute Harvey Elliott and Mohamed Salah tucked it away. At that point, it was a question of could Liverpool go on and get what would be an enormous win. In the end, it did stay 2-2. They get a point. And it means that Arsenal are top of the Premier League table on goal difference, 9 better than Liverpool, both on 71 points. Those two teams, Man City, now just a point behind the Reds, having beaten Crystal Palace on Saturday. So it's no longer in Liverpool's hands. We'll talk about the state. I suppose technically it's in Liverpool's hands if they rattle off a few 5-6-0 wins, but realistically speaking, probably not. We'll talk about the state of the title race a little bit later on in the podcast, but we'll focus on the game itself. First of all, and Liam, if you could just give me your sort of 3-word summary of that match and how you saw that performance, because in some respects it felt like a replay of what we'd already witnessed in the FA Cup.
Very much so. 3-word summary, sick of them. And by there we meant United rather than Liverpool. We've just seen that match so many times already this season. And of course, out of all the teams, like to have that happen 3 times in one season, it has to be probably the one that most Liverpool fans dislike the most out of all the other rival clubs who are around. It's one of those where I think if that were against like a Man City or an Arsenal where you play well, they generally have a lot of the ball against them 3 times in one season and have no way to show for it. It's frustrating, but it's all the more frustrating when it's number one, because it's Man United, and number two, when it's a Man United team which is very much there for the taking. Like, we're not talking about the Alex Ferguson vintage, who, if you got a draw at Old Trafford, you're already saying, oh yeah, that's a point we'll take all day long. Like, we are, in performance wise, levels wise, we are vastly superior to them. But even at one nil yesterday, half time, I put a message in the group chat saying, oh, here we go, I've seen this game before. We're going to regret not making the most of these chances because it's Man United and because they've already had so many matches in recent weeks where teams have about 20 odd shots against them and yet United still find a way to win. And unfortunately, my worst fears ended up being materialised. Now, we know United didn't win, but I think for most of us yesterday, like it was that draw didn't feel like a positive. Should have finished in the first half, like in the cup game last month. We should have destroyed them at Anfield back in December somehow. I actually find it incredible that Liverpool played 49 matches in all competitions this season. And that game at Anfield was the only one in which they haven't scored against that bloody United team. So, yeah, it's not, again, I know we can have to talk about the title race in greater detail later on. It's not fatal to our title chances, like some people are making out, but taking the game as of itself, it's hugely frustrating and has to feel like 2 points dropped rather than one earned.
Definitely. Just as you were talking there, I was sort of thinking to myself, I wonder if you added up the shots Liverpool have had from those games, it'd probably be about, my guess is that it probably comes to about 80 or something like that, and to score 4 goals from those shots, one of them being a penalty, speaks to the issue that Liverpool have had. But my 3-word review was genuinely beyond belief, which was just the overriding emotion I had when Fernandes put that ball over Callagher's head and into the net in 50th minutes or whatever it was with United's first shot. And I mean, of all the ways for it to actually play out, Liverpool being punished for not taking more of their chances. You know, that was just, I couldn't have even conceived of it being that painful or that bizarre, really. And I do think both of the goals United scored were sort of once in a career moments. I mean, for Fernandes, Keller is inches away from getting his fingertips on it. It's basically a perfect strike. I mean, credit to him for that, but I can't see him replicating that. And then obviously the Mainu one, he's a great player. I didn't expect him to channel Philippe Coutinho in that moment. Kind of gave me vibes of Federico Makeda as well in 2009 against, I think it was against Cardiff, I want to, maybe against Aston Villa. Villa, yeah, it was against Villa. So, yeah, they won 3-2, I think. So, and he's a great player. Scored a great goal against Wolves earlier this season. Don't necessarily see him scoring too many more curlers where he's basically facing away from the goal in his career. Maybe I'll be wrong about that. But, yeah, just the nature of those two goals. I mean, you just thought to yourself, are we sort of cursed in this title race all of a sudden? Especially given some of the other things that may be gone on this season. But, yeah, so that was maybe the most painful aspect of the game. I mean, I thought to myself last night, do you know what? I'll check the XG because maybe it's not as bad as the narrative suggests. Maybe because they've put a lot of Liverpool chances, felt like half chances that it, you know, it'll only be around two anyway. 3.67 it was, 0.7 for Man United. Based on that, you'd expect Liverpool to probably win the game 4-1. They've drawn 2-2. Possession, 62%, shows the level of control they had for long periods, not all the game. 28 shots against 9. United's goal was their first shot of any description, which, I mean, you just couldn't believe. I mean, this is what I mean. You just couldn't believe what you're watching. Like, I don't think anyone. Sometimes we talk about script writers in football. No script writers coming up with the goal sort of happening in that manner. And it was actually the first time United failed to have a shot in the first half of a game since April 2022, also against Liverpool. And the first time at Old Trafford since October 2015. So, in that sense, I sort of, when the team came off at half time, I was like, do you know what? They're actually playing really well. Like, if you take that FA Cup game out of it, obviously you're still going to be worried about not taking the chances. But it was a very strong performance in a game where Liverpool have, and they started a little bit nervy here, but, you know, think back to like 18-19 in a similar situation and other seasons, 19-20, when there's been a big gulf between the teams and Liverpool haven't shown their quality. And that's what they did in this game. That's what in the FA Cup game. They showed how much better they were than Manchester United, which is something they so rarely do. But they weren't able to kind of sort of do that where it matters, which is on the scoreboard. And that's why it was obviously mixed emotions at halftime. And obviously what you sort of feared, Liam, did come to pass in the end. Liverpool had 7 big chances in this game as well, and Man United only had 1. So what, to me, it sort of felt like watching it, that it was kind of an accumulation of sort of chances that were like half chances or a little bit better than that. And there wasn't sort of too many of them, but on one or two that I was like, God, that's a massive chance. He absolutely has to score there. But when you have so many chances that are like 50-50, you expect eventually you're going to score one. I mean, that's just the nature of the match in that situation. So, yeah, it sort of did feel inevitable that something bad was going to happen. You just had that feeling in the back of your mind. Sort of like Sheffield United the other day, which, again, I mean, this game didn't feel too dissimilar to that, which sort of says it all. One of the frustrating things for Liverpool as well is that they had their worst spell of the entire game right after conceding the second goal. Old Trafford, obviously, you know, right, you know, at the top of its voice at that point, and you were sort of worried as to what was going to happen. Were United going to go on and get a third there? And it took them a while, sort of 10 minutes or so, maybe longer, to sort of steady themselves in the game, reassert control. In the end, they did that. Thankfully, they did manage to get a point. Maybe that could prove important from that sort of position that they were in. I mean, it's hard to kind of construe it as a point gain in that situation because they'd already thrown away the lead. But it sort of feels like, and I've said this about, I think I said this about the Luton game back in November, like a good way to get a bad result overall. And the biggest frustration is that, well, certainly when it comes to the rivalry, is that Liverpool have failed to beat this United team with 3 goals. And this, I mean, in the pantheon of Man United side since since Ferguson left. I mean, this has got to be right up there in terms of, you know, there've been teams that have probably got fewer points and been a bit weaker generally. But in terms of, you know, how open they are, I can't recall one this bad since Ferguson left. And to, you know, to draw twice and lose one against them is something that makes you just think, did we use up all our goals or all our fortune in the 7-0 win last season? Yes. Maybe we should have distributed that a bit more. Just the way football works sometimes, I suppose. But yeah, so that's definitely a painful aspect of this. I remember saying after the FA Cup quarterfinal that doesn't really matter in the sense that United aren't going to go on and win the competition. You know, I'm 99.9% sure that they'd lose the final to Man City if they do beat Coventry in the semis, which obviously they probably will. And likewise, in this game, I thought if United win, it's going to be construed as, especially with Villa having dropped points, or they can go on now and get one of those Champions League places, this can be their springboard. I mean, that's sort of outcome biased in a way, because you actually look up, the performance was dreadful, absolutely dreadful for Man United. And a lot of the times these games against the big teams have been a positive for them in the sense that they don't have to try and impose themselves, which they're incapable of doing in a game. And they can just sort of play that more basketball style that we saw suited them here. But for sort of that period in the first half, you just saw how bad United really are at the moment. And they're ill-equipped to go and finish fourth or fifth, in my opinion. But anyway, poor result, agonising result in its own way, but far from fatal for title ambitions, like you said, Liam. So we normally in this sort of section of the podcast start talking about the individual players on sort of both sides of the coin. I want to begin with Gerald Kwanza. Actually, because he's made a big mistake in this game, is the reality. What did you think of his sort of performance as a whole, Liam, and obviously the mistake that he made? But also, I want to get your thoughts on the decision to start him over Ibrahima Konate. Now, Konate got a knock in the game against Sheffield United. There was actually, I don't know if this was shown on the TV, but from where I was in the ground, I can see that they had the stretcher ready on the sideline. So clearly there was a lot of concern around the injury in the first place. And it might have been the case that it was just a decision not to risk him for this game if he's carrying a bit of pain still from that challenge from the Sheffield United player. But maybe you could then make the case that even if it was injury-related or fitness-related, that actually if he could only play one of the two games, and we know this is Konate, he doesn't necessarily hold up well over kind of this tighter turnaround with fixtures. Should Kwanza have played on Thursday against the worst team in the league, and then Konate gets the game at the weekend, which is a massive one in Liverpool's season? So yeah, I want to get your thoughts on Kwanza yesterday and also the selection call that Klopp made between those two players.
I think the first thing I'll say here is it's one of those where it feels very easy to be wise after the fact. So I'm going to rewind the clock back to when I saw the team sheet coming out. I'll admit, I was a little surprised to see Kwanza starting because I thought he would have been in there. But it's in these situations, I generally tend to trust the manager as he works the players day in, day out. More often than not, he gets his spot on. I mean, we've seen how good his substitutions have been this season, and I think they made an impact again yesterday. And like you say, only those within the camp would have known just how ready Konate would have been to start that match yesterday. And on top of that, I think everyone would agree that Kwanza has been magnificent this season and that playing in big matches hasn't fazed him. So while maybe I was a little surprised to see him in the starting lineup yesterday, it's not one of those where I'm going to castigate the manager saying he got it wrong for starting him. As for the error, well, I suppose that's something that a manager can't legislate for. It's just one of those where, unfortunately, he's had, you know, a bit of a momentary brain lapse, and was one which was punished to the full extent. It was out of keeping with his overall performance yesterday, because again, generally I thought he was solid. Like, United's forwards didn't really have much. I think Brian Ayers didn't get much change out of him. Their goal came from, well, it was a great finish by Fernandes, but it was extremely fortuitous as to how it came about. what really has annoyed me afterwards is that he's had to, take action with his social media accounts because of some comments he's receiving. He's 21 years old. It's his first season, Joe, as a senior Liverpool player. He has been excellent for, 7 or 8 months. He makes one mistake, the type of mistake that even a very experienced player can make in a match. And it's just unfortunate for him that it went down to, that it cost us a goal and in such a huge game. Like, I'm not having this thing about, Kwanzaa cost us the result yesterday, and if we do end up, maybe missing out on the title by a point, that people are going to point fingers at him saying, that mistake cost us the title. I'm not having any of that. It's over 38 games. You can't pin an entire season down to one moment. He'll be the first person, when that ball was hit the net yesterday, he'd be the first person to know that he had made a serious mistake. I doubt Klopp would have recognised that as well. And he would have talked to him afterwards and said, look, next time, just play it up the line or something, or just don't pass it across your goal, please. So, it's a mistake. He learned from it. He'd be the first person to know that. It shouldn't detract from overall what a magnificent player he's been for us this season. I hope he does start against Atalanta on Thursday night, because if he can put in a strong performance in that game, it will go some way towards quick redemption for that one moment yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that Atalanta game, and there's sort of plenty to get into there, but that's kind of was part of my thought process. That I would have thought, if you looked at these three games, Sheffield United, Man United, and Atalanta, and obviously there's a week between the first and third of those matches, I would have thought that Klopp would have done Konate in the middle one, and then Kwanzaa for the other two, just sort of independent and coming into it beforehand. So I would say Klopp got it wrong on this one, just because, again, I do suspect that Konate probably would have been risked for this game. I mean, risked in inverted commas, that's just because of his fitness record. Generally, I think he probably would have gone for the two starting succession if he hadn't been on the end of that tackle the other day and had that injury scare. But I think even still, like I said in the sort of question I posed to you, Liam, I just feel as if the call should have been made to give Kwanzaa the game against Sheffield United and then, play Konate here. And maybe there was an element of Konate's obviously didn't play against Brighton, not played for Liverpool for a while. He needed the sharpness, and the plan was to play him against United if not, and went wrong. But ultimately, for me, it comes down to this, arguably, you can say this about a few games, but at this stage of the season, it feels like the biggest game of the whole season, which is City did a few weeks back. And I just think you've got to play your best team in those games. You've got to find a way to do that. And I just feel like Klopp didn't necessarily ensure that was the case. And that is not an against Kwanzaa and what he's done this season. You mentioned people saying that the mistakes cost us the title. I mean, first off, I think I wisely stayed off Twitter after the game yesterday because I knew that it was going to be treated like the apocalypse by 50% of people, the results. And it's just not worth almost getting too invested in that. But people saying it could cost us the title. I mean, what does that mean then for arguably two of Liverpool's three best players, Alisson and Van Dijk, against Arsenal in a comparable game and against a more direct rival? I mean, it just goes to show you anyone can fluff their lines in those moments. Every single, Liverpool star player, the very best players in this squad have probably had a moment during the season where they've negatively influenced the results of the match. And I think you are quite right to say that it's over 38 games and you can't necessarily pin title races on one moment like that. As for Kwanzaa, I think the game kind of probably encapsulated his season in a way that where he was largely rock solid, and you mentioned that he did sort of keep United quite quiet. Rashford is always a big worry in these games. Seems to always score against Liverpool at Old Trafford. Ends up coming off injured and hasn't made any impact at all, and that was credit to how Kwanzaa marshalled him on that flank. And he has largely been very solid, but he's also had like the odd moment from time to time where he's given the ball away or been beaten or something like that. The game against Man City encapsulated that too. I think we were all impressed with how he did, but he also gave the ball away near his own box. And I want to say it led to Foden hitting the post or something like that. Or there was a big chance anyway for Foden maybe stemming from it. Or Liverpool just about managed to deal with it or whatever. Not fully clear on exactly how it played out, but I know he did sort of make that error. And to, you know, this game against United kind of followed that similar pattern because made the error for the goal, had one or two shaky moments earlier in the game, generally played quite well. Obviously, what everyone's going to remember is that mistake, especially given the impact that I had. So I think overall, like, my issue isn't with Kwanzaa. You know, I can't expect any more of him than what he's done this season. He's wildly surpassed any expectations that I could possibly have had. It's more with, I do think Konate should have played. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, broadly playing well, Liam, and things like that, obviously barring this mistake. But I just feel as if you're going to be kind of ruthless about it, you need the world-class player in Konate who's going to be sort of reliable within the game and also be a difference maker, if that makes sense. Whereas, you know, Kwanzaa just couldn't fully sustain that for that full 90-minute performance. So, yeah, I think I'm not going to criticise him too harshly, but I just think it's a bit of an oversight not to find a way to get Konate into the lineup for this match, to be completely honest. We'll see how it plays out with the rotation in the next few. And it is a shame that Joel Matip isn't fit as well, because he'd be so ideal for these situations, given how he was playing earlier in the season. But he's kind of just been forgotten about because he's been ruled out so early. But on the flip side then, Liam, who are the players who you think should be pleased with their performance yesterday, whether they were a starter or a substitute? And also, if there's anyone else you think we need to mention who struggled a little bit within the game and wasn't on their best form, and maybe give them a mention as well.
Yeah, I think in terms of those who probably could have done better, I suppose like Szoboszlai definitely was nowhere near his best. Like had some good ball carrying moments, but generally speaking, I wasn't wholly surprised when he was substituted. Nunes, again, I know he kind of seems like, for everyone who's not a Liverpool fan, he seems like the easy target. And that frustrates me in a big way at times. But I do think yesterday was one of those where where things weren't coming off for him, and we were kind of seeing maybe the more impetuous kind of side to his game, which can let him down at times. Salah scores a penalty, gets us the point in the end, for which we can be grateful. Joe comes up clutch like he does so often for us, but again, and all this has been a kind of a theme of recent matches as well, he's not played anywhere near the level that we know he can. You probably should have had two goals yesterday, because there was that one chance where Onana made the initial save, ball was back to Salah, and he's quite close out. Some could say, oh, the angle is tight or whatever, but you would expect a player of his quality to have dispatched that from the rebound. So, yeah, I kind of feel like the three of them were well short of their usual standards. In terms of the strong performers, yeah, Diaz, other than the goal, I just think he was by far the liveliest of the three up top. And so that's what that has been the case for most of the seasons. So again, I think even when Johnny comes back to full fitness, which I understand he's quite close to doing, you know, I can see Diaz being kept in the team on current form. And Elliot off the bench again. And I know it's a discussion we've had on this pod before about, you know, is Elliot better as a starter or off the bench? But given the impact that he's made as a substitute in some games this season, yesterday was another one of those where, you know, he comes in, like he gives, you know, just instantly brings a greater impetus, wins the penalty, which, by the way, was a clear penalty. I know there's been some bit of discourse about was it, wasn't it? You know, I think it was clear-cut enough in the end. And possibly he played himself into contention to start either next Thursday night or against Palace next Sunday. But will likely start one, but not both of those matches. And we probably can expect a few changes here and there from the pool that Klopp has available to him. So, yeah, I think in terms of those who I think came out the best yesterday from that match, Diaz and Elliott for me.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with Elliott. Obviously winning the penalty and also just generally looking quite threatening. You knew he was going to kind of come on in the situation. You knew that Klopp was going to turn to him, and that's because he has been such an impactful player off the bench this season. I wonder what's going to kind of happen with that third midfield slot. I mean, Endo, I think yesterday was a little bit sort of... didn't make the same sort of impact as he does within the midfield, but I think he probably will, especially given how well McAllister plays alongside him. He probably will start the majority of Liverpool's remaining games, as McAllister might well start all of them. So then who kind of completes that midfield? And I think it's a discussion I had with Chris recently on one of our podcasts. And I do just sort of wonder if we're going to see Elliott and Jones really making a serious challenge to Szoboszlai, who he looks just a little bit tired from this season, to be honest. Obviously, first season at the club, adjusting to a new league, and he probably covers more distance than anyone else in the squad, I would say. Had some injuries and things like that. I just don't think we've seen the best of him for quite a while now, for being completely honest. And that might well open the door for Elliott and Jones, who have both been very good this season in their own right. I thought McAllister was Liverpool's best player again. As I've said on virtually every podcast, I mean, you could copy and paste that sentence for about the last 10 episodes. Sort of rocked a little bit like the rest of the team was when United went 2-1 up. But yeah, for the most part, the difference I'm noticing with him now is like, I just, when he gets the ball, I expect things to happen. Whereas when he first joined, and granted he was getting on the ball in deeper areas, it was like he wasn't necessarily going to be the one playing maybe that incisive pass to the same extent. But now you just look at him and you think he could be the one who actually opens the defence up. So it's really exciting to see him on the ball at the moment. And yeah, I think you make a fair point to mention Nunez too. It just felt like a bit scruffy yesterday, just not making the right decisions around the box, holding onto the ball too long, losing individual battles. And I mean, there was that one where he really should have pulled the ball back, and he just does this sort of cross slash shot that isn't really going to anyone. Probably the most frustrating moment for him. And yeah, just the execution around the box wasn't quite at it for him. Even if he does get the assist, I think he could have done much better yesterday. So those would be the ones that I'd mention. Anyway, so the key point is obviously what all of this means for the title race. I've got the fixtures in front of me here, so we'll kind of come on to those in a second. I mean, how damaging do you think this is, Liam? And obviously, we're recording this on the morning after the game, having sort of woken up the next day. How are you feeling about the title race now that the dust has settled?
Yesterday was frustrating, very frustrating, because we were clearly better than the opposition and didn't win the game. And it always feels like more damaging when you play after your rivals and they've won, as Arsenal and City both did comprehensively on Saturday. So it's kind of about obviously the inverse of last weekend, where we won our match and put our feet up and watched the two of them drawing at the head-to-head, and went to bed last Sunday night feeling very happy with our lot. As opposed to last night when the shoe was on the other foot. I made a point, because I can be prone to sort of doom-mongering after a result like yesterday's. But when I saw the table flash up on Sky after the game, and I saw that we were still second, with 71 points, and that only goal difference was keeping us off the top, I told myself, you know what, there's still 7 matches left. I think the result, it just would have been far more damaging if we were, say, the third last game of the season, and we'd only 2 more opportunities to overcome Arsenal and City at the moment and send off Man City. So there is still ample scope there for us to, for us to still come out on top. As I'm looking at it now, looking at it objectively, I don't think we will win it, because I do expect there to be a couple of more matches similar to yesterday where we trip up against inferior opposition who just seem to know how to play us. Everton is the obvious one that springs to mind there. like Spurs, even though it's at Anfield, sure, they have had a tendency to do us over, like when it comes to the run into to a season, like we saw a couple of years ago. Like even like Fulham and West Ham away, it'd be no picnic either. So I do think that overall, like, I feel like Arsenal and Man City, even though City are a point behind us, we know what they're like at this stage of the season. You know, they strolled through against Palace on Saturday, you know, even though they conceded first. Like the fact that they're able to like rest like Ford and a couple more and still ease to victory in a game like that where we only won the stoppage time goal when we visited in December. Sort of shows you the level that they're at. Performance wise, I kind of feel like the other two are playing better than us at the moment. Maybe over the last 5 or 6 games. So if I was to call it now, do I think Liverpool will win the league? No. Do I think Liverpool can still win the league? Definitely. As I say, look, just one of those where it's happened. You watch back. You take the lessons from it, and you try to put those right for the next game. Like if we go and beat Crystal Palace handsomely next Sunday, which we're capable of doing, even though again they've proven to be thorny opposition for us in the past. Then the narrative changes again, and as some people pointed out, even though Arsenal and Man City are both playing really well at the moment, they too have their fixture and circling in red, where they're looking at saying, "Oh, this could be a potential, potential banana skin." So overall, frustrating, but there's still time there for the happy ending.
Yeah, Arsenal undeniably imperious at the moment. Basically, just not giving the opposition a sniff. At the other end, and obviously a lot more ruthless than Liverpool in front of goal at this stage. I mean, looking at their fixtures now and the way they're currently playing, I would expect them to beat Aston Villa at home, Wolves away, Chelsea at home, Bournemouth at home, probably United away as well. I mean, Klopp said, sort of a little snippet from his press conference where he said if United play like they did yesterday, then Arsenal will win, and I do think they'll win that. And then obviously Everton on the final day, I think, is pretty much a write-off. Tottenham away is a huge one for them, I feel like. I mean, Spurs are a huge factor in this race, as we know. And they're going to be obviously desperate to win the game. They're much better than they were last season when Arsenal went there. I think 1-2-0. So that's the one you sort of cling to, I think, when you look at their running. If they win all of those games, you know, it's hard to argue that they're not deserving champions, to be honest, because it would be a run of, 8 in a row to end the season. I said before this game that I think all of the teams in the race are going to drop points before the end of the season, and I still stand by that. And the one comfort is, you know, if this had happened on Thursday, I mean, that would have felt like a proper gut punch against Sheffield United, and it nearly did. I think this game, of all Liverpool's remaining fixtures, if they were only going to drop points in one, and obviously that's far from guaranteed, this was the most likely because of their track record against United, really. And I know Villa are higher than them in the league, but I still think in any given season, you'd expect Liverpool to sort of struggle most at Old Trafford, and with Villa as well, with it being the penultimate game of the season, I'm sort of holding out hope that there's going to be like a European semi-final around then, and that, especially given how poor United are, that Villa have already sealed that Champions League spot by that point, and that would then maybe lead to changes and maybe taking the eye off the ball slightly, and which I think drastically changes the look of that particular fixture as well. So, and you know, the derby's going to be maybe a little bit similar to yesterday too. You know, you mentioned Spurs at home as well, so plenty of possible hurdles that Liverpool will have to face, but I just think that the game against United was the biggest challenge, I think, to Liverpool to navigate. So to drop points there doesn't feel particularly disastrous. And, you know, obviously City are a factor in all this too, but Liverpool have kind of wiped out their margin for error now. So it's still obviously the case that if they can go and win their remaining games, which I think they are capable of doing, then it won't necessarily matter what City do. So I think for the moment, if we just sort of look at Arsenal with being the team ahead of Liverpool, So, I mean, that's how I kind of see that. It's a game where I think, obviously, the way it played out was excruciating, but I think a win would have felt massive, you know, akin to when Liverpool went to Arsenal in 2022 and won 2-0 in March. But a draw isn't a disaster, basically. Like, I think it's one of them where the upside of a win is higher than the sort of downside of drop points, basically. I just think, obviously, the way Arsenal are playing at the moment is worrying, and they have this kind of aspect of peaking at the right time, which I think is obviously hugely important within a season. But I'm still sort of hopeful that they're going to stumble in at least one of those games, as much as for the majority of them, you can see them coming through quite comfortably. And also a factor in this as well, obviously, you know, you mentioned before, Liam, Liverpool are going to go to, are going to face Atalanta in the Europa League. You think that, obviously, we'll see how the first leg plays out, but you think that there's going to be sort of maybe five changes to the team type thing. And it won't be too much of a drop off in terms of the level, because, you know, they've obviously got some players coming back and things like that. And hopefully they can get through that one. But Arsenal, I've got Bayern Munich in the next couple of games. They've potentially got a semi-final coming against City or Real Madrid as well. And then City on the other side of that, I've got Real Madrid and then maybe Arsenal. So the Champions League, I mean, that's the difference between these three teams as to what their midweek's going to look like at the moment. So that could well be a factor that plays into Liverpool's hands as well. I mean, one of my friends said recently that he thinks Arsenal playing City in the semis is like a dream scenario, even though that means one of those teams probably then goes on to win the competition, given what the other side of the draw looks like. But those two would basically take physical lumps out of each other over two games, just in terms of how tight and how draining that would be. And that would probably suit Liverpool quite nicely, I think, if that ended up being the tie, because there'd be so little to separate those two. Could well go to extra time, for example, in the second leg. So there's all these variables that can still come into it. And I also think, I mean, variables-wise, it's going to depend on what kind of teams you're facing. I mean, the Aston Villa team that went to the Etihad a few days ago, you know, injuries, rotation, things like that comes into it. You know, we're praying Spurs will be fully fit when they take on Arsenal. You know, these are all factors that come into it. So that's a very long-winded way of saying I think there's going to be twists and turns between now and the end of the season, away from Anfield as well. So, and if there isn't, we've been through this before, we'll be able to get through it again. If we just watch our rivals win every single match. But I still sort of believe that the door will be open for Liverpool again, as to whether they can walk through it. And I think maybe the biggest single question from this game is whether Liverpool are killers, to be honest, in terms of are they cold-blooded enough to ride out spells from the opposition in games and, you know, put away the chances that really matter? And is that going to be the thing that just sees them fall short? That is what they have to respond to in the games to come. And having faced City, Brighton and Man United recently, I mean, that's a tough spell of games. You'd hope now that, I mean, the playing teams in Palace, Fulham, Everton and West Ham. I mean, if I just have a quick look at the table, because I know West Ham won at the weekend, didn't they, against Wolves. I mean, West Ham are seventh there, but the other teams, I mean, Fulham 13th, Palace 14th, Everton 15th. Every game at this stage of the season is painful in its own way and feels like much harder than it ordinarily would. But in terms of the identity of the opponents, you'd have to say things are lessening a little bit for Liverpool at this stage. So hopefully they can, you know, rattle off a few wins and keep maximum pressure on an Arsenal side that did falter last season in similar circumstances. But we'll leave it there for today's episode, and we'll obviously keep abreast of every single development in the race from now on. Hopefully a few more weeks for Liverpool are having the chance to play first and put a bit of pressure on their rivals, rather than sort of watching them go into the distance a little bit and then trying to make that ground back up. If you have enjoyed today's podcast, please give us a 5-star review. Remember to follow the podcast, press the notification button as well to get a message when we post new episodes. We've got our podcast email address in the episode description, so you can get in touch with us on there with any questions or comments. And you can follow myself and Liam on Twitter by clicking the links in the description too. Liverpool's next game, thankfully, isn't in the Premier League. It's against Atalanta in the Europa League, as we mentioned a couple of times today. So our next podcast will naturally be our reaction to that one. So make sure you stick around for that. But until then, take care.